My guest at this time, John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always great to be here, Greg. Thanks for having me, and happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you, sir. And let's start with the political landscape. To no one's surprise, Mitt Romney easily won Washington, D.C., and Maryland in the primaries on Tuesday. He was expected to win Wisconsin. He did. It was closer, but nonetheless an important win for him as the narrative of an inevitable nominee certainly gathers steam. And now we're looking at polls, John, where Rick Santorum is falling behind even in his home state of Pennsylvania, which will vote later this month. Is this just running out the clock, or is Rick Santorum right when he's saying it's only halftime?
Well, remember something. Dwight Eisenhower in 1952, Richard Nixon in 1968, and Democrats Jimmy Carter in 1976 and Barack Obama in 2008 all went the distance. Eisenhower and Nixon winning nomination at their conventions, Carter and Obama wrapping it up in the twilight days of the nomination battle. So races have been known to go on for a while. Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich have made it clear they're in for the duration, and it appears as though Mitt Romney will have to win the magic 1,144 delegates. It may take another month. It may take campaigns in Pennsylvania, Delaware, West Virginia, and North Carolina, but he'll do it.
So you think he'll get there regardless of whether or not we still have four candidates on the ballot by the end of the cycle?
Right, but there's been an important sea change in this, Greg, in the sense that Santorum and Gingrich have both toned down the rhetoric considerably. They're not attacking Mitt Romney and calling him names such as a confused Massachusetts moderate anymore, or suggesting we'd be better off with Barack Obama as president than the Republican frontrunner. That's calmed down, and everyone seems focused on the common enemy, namely the man in the White House.
Then what's the point of staying in if they know they don't have a realistic shot at this?
You want the truth?
Yeah.
Okay. Pay off campaign debts and make supporters happy.
Okay. Then by staying in and going state to state, they do better with their finances? Don't donors get to the point where they see a diminishing marginal return?
Some do, but there are still some loyalists who will be there, and they'll pay the bills until the last light bulb is turned out and the last bill to the power company is paid.
Stay on the good side of Sheldon Adelson and Foster Freeze, I guess, is the lesson of those two campaigns at the moment, John. But let's take a look at the President's Week. He had a couple of interesting moments. First of all, his scolding of the Supreme Court at his press conference on Monday, something that his administration has tried to walk back extensively since then. In the end, was this just a blip on the radar screen in this debate, or is the president going to regret what he did this week?
This is the first time a president has publicly scolded the Supreme Court, and this is the second time he has done that, the other being, of course, the State of the Union message last year. This is the first time a president has been so public in his scolding of the high court since, of course, Franklin Roosevelt, when the nine old men, as they were called at the time, struck down much of the New Deal program in the Schechter case of 1935. FDR not only declared war on the Supreme Court, he tried to enlarge it, court packing as it was called, and that was the first political setback he suffered during his tenure in the White House. Barack Obama knows today he can attack the court, and that will energize the Democratic base. The left wing of the Democratic Party does not like the Roberts Court, which they know very well has four committed constructionists and one justice who more often than not leads with them, Anthony Kennedy. I assume that he is gauging a possible Supreme Court ruling against the Affordable Health Care Act, Obamacare, coming out in June, because then he can really step up the rhetoric against the justices or against the majority of justices, and that will energize his base even more.
John, let's move to another issue the president spoke about at length this week, and that's the House Republican budget, largely led by Congressman Paul Ryan, the chairman of the House Budget Committee. This is a critique the president offered to a large extent last year in response to the Ryan budget, but he painted a very grim picture of what America would look like in terms of safety standards, even weather forecasts, Medicare, Medicaid, that sort of thing. His supporters say important to make sure that important priorities stay in place. Others say this is shameless demagoguery. Do you think the American people are going to choose sides on that, or will it pretty much fall along their political instinct?
Poor Paul Ryan is all I can say. Here is someone who thinks outside the proverbial box and comes up with an idea for preserving health care for our senior citizens in a new form that will only affect people 55 and under, and comes up with a plan for dealing with the deficit 20 years. The White House says that grass will grow on the streets if this takes effect. And there's a number of Republicans who say that he doesn't go far enough. Congressman Joe Walsh said just that last week. But Congressman Walsh also said he would nonetheless support the Ryan plan because it was a start. If we are ever going to preserve a country that is solvent for our children and our children's children, then we are going to have to make some hard decisions. Prime Minister Cameron in Britain did this for 2 years and continues to do so, and he has a 7-year plan to bring down that country's deficit as a part of the gross domestic product. We're only starting to talk about it here. Congressman Ryan is leading the effort in that regard, and it's a noble effort.
John, last topic. We've seen rockets going from Gaza into Israel for some time now. Now we've seen one from Egypt into Israel, which has a lot of folks worried about the stability of that relationship in the wake of the ouster of Hosni Mubarak over a year ago now. Are we seeing a relationship deteriorate rapidly in front of our eyes, or should we not get too bent out of shape about one incident?
I am going to say that Israel has had its share of rocket attacks before. Certainly when the late Yasser Arafat was alive, the area that is now the Palestinian Directorate caused a lot of consternation for Israel, including at this time Passover 1 year. And former Prime Minister Ariel Sharon responded with force. It's a little more dangerous and dicey right now, Greg, because in Egypt we don't know what kind of government will be in charge. The Muslim Brotherhood reversed itself and will run a candidate for president. Tunisia is very uncertain. I feel better about their future leadership in the post-Ben Ali era. And Libya, again, uncertain. But there remains a strong possibility that Israel will be alone and not have any neighbors who are also friends. And this is one reason we have to watch the situation closely. It's also interesting to see that in such a fractured political system, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is stronger than ever politically and emerging as a wartime leader, almost as Franklin Roosevelt did in this country in World War II, someone above politics.
Well, John, we'll have to leave it there for this week. Have a blessed Easter with your family, and we'll talk to you next week.
Happy Easter to yours as well.
Thank you, sir. John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.